When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hello, everybody. Chuck here with your Saturday Selects pick, How Landfills Work. June 23rd, 2015. This is a good one, everyone. This is part of our, I guess, City Works suite of podcasts. And how things like landfills work is super important and very interesting and not quite as depressing as you might think. A little bit, but it's also kind of a marvel of engineering, how these things actually get pulled off. So take a listen, take a re-listen even, How Landfills Work right now.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. There's Jerry over there. And this is Stuff You Should Know.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's great.
Good.
Good yourself. I found this topic, and I was starting to tell you before how interesting I thought it was, and you should save it.
Yeah, you went, it's awesome. I was like, stop, it's gold.
So now I'm going to say it. It's awesome.
It is.
And landfills, the concept of a landfill, even though it ain't perfect, is pretty neat.
Yeah.
And even though we need to reduce the amount of trash, especially Americans, produce,
yeah,
there is still going to be trash in the world and it needs to be dealt with. And this is way better than the old days when in like pre-1930 New York City,
yeah,
they would dump their garbage in the ocean. And then between 1930 and...
Still do that, you realize.
Well, New York City doesn't dump it right in the Atlantic Ocean.
No, but a lot of garbage is dumped in the ocean.
Yeah, we talked about the Great Pacific Garbage Patch.
Yeah.
And then between the 1930s and the 1970s, they had what they called dumps, which is a big hole in the ground,
right,
covered in rats and birds, and you would just dump garbage.
Yeah.
To leach into everything.
Yes,
around
which
it
is messed up.
Yeah.
And the EPA comes along, and I think the 60s, definitely the 70s, and was like, we need to do something better about this. But so the idea of the landfill was born in about the 60s, I believe.
Well, the first modern sanitary landfill was 1937 in Fresno.
Okay, that's right. And yeah, it's like a National Historic Place or something.
Yeah,
like that,
because
right?
It kind of kicked off the whole thing. But it wasn't until the 60s and 70s that they started passing laws saying that, like, every state really needs to start doing the same thing.
Right. And like you said before that, they just dumped their trash in a pit, which people have been doing for millennia, at least.
Mm-hmm.
They were burning their trash also.
Yeah.
And it sounds mind-bogglingly awful, and it is, especially from an environmental standpoint, but they didn't have the trash problem that we have now in the 60s. Since the 1960s, our trash generation, municipal solid waste generation, mm-hmm, has doubled.
Tripled.
And I was like, why is that? What's going on? Apparently, it's the advent of cheap packaging. Before styrofoam packaging, before mm-hmm, plastic, before aluminum cans that everybody just threw away.
Everything was wrapped in a T-shirt that you could wear.
Exactly. And like when you weren't carrying around a slab of meat in the T-shirt from the butcher to your house,
yeah,
you wore your T-shirt. So you reused it, right?
No.
But no, you would have maybe like, do you remember when Sam the butcher brought Alice the meat? Beastie Boys reference?
I was just about to say. Fred Flintstone driving around with 2 feet.
I think bald it's feet. Bald feet, yeah. Which is, I guess, a really weird way of putting it as barefoot.
Well, it didn't rhyme.
Bald feet. Anyway, he would bring it to her wrapped in like white butcher's paper.
Yeah.
And she would throw it away, and it would really not take up much space of the dump. Uh-huh. It would decompose. It wasn't like styrofoam, which lasts for 50,000 years, right?
Yeah.
And so starting about 1960, packaging, especially very non-biodegradable packaging, took off like a rocket.
Yeah, you could still go to the butcher, though, now.
You can.
And you get it in paper, but you go to that big chain grocery store, and it's going to be plastic and styrofoam.
Right. So between 1960 and 1990, our packaging waste increased by 80%. That meant that we had to do something. We had a lot more trash, and we had to take care of this trash in ways that we hadn't before. And so the modern landfill, based on that Fresno model, boomed, unfortunately.
That's right.
But even now, they're finding we went too far in one direction.
Yeah.
Now we need to adjust it, massage it a little bit.
Refine it.
And we're coming up with a new generation of landfills.
That's right. So if you're talking about a landfill, the goal of a landfill is not to compost trash. And a lot of people probably don't know this.
Yeah.
It's not to compost trash such that it breaks down super quickly and biodegrades. It is the opposite of that. It is to keep it as dry as possible
in an airtight environment.
And just bury it.
Lock it away from the surrounding world.
That's right. And so that's what a landfill is, a sanitary landfill, municipal solid waste or MSW landfill. They isolate the trash from the environment.
Right.
They don't just dump it on the dirt and let things leach in. And this thus begins the landfill podcast. Because there are a lot of components to that.
Yeah.
But that's the long and short of it.
It's true. And what that's called in the whole idea behind that landfill that was in reaction to
out of sight, out of mind?
That's one.
Yeah.
A dry tomb is the industry lingo for it.
Oh.
It was created in reaction to trash just being allowed to seep into the groundwater.
Sure.
And
methane to just leak out into the air.
Blow up.
Yeah, sure.
Apparently, houses that have utility pipes that pass by old landfills, methane will get into those utility pipes and like get in mixed in with the electricity. And when you go to plug in your toaster and it sparks, kaboom!
Really?
Yes. It's a problem with old landfills because they were all idiots with trash like up until the 60s, 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
And even still, we have a big problem with trash, but nothing like it was before as far as taking care of it. Well, we're starting to really get a handle on it.
Americans produce 4.6 pounds of trash per day per person.
Yeah, and you know what's crazy is you'd think, well, America's probably like as bad as it gets. No, the UK is. America's like in the middle,
roughly,
for trash generation
and
recovery.
Oh, I thought we were the worst.
No, the UK's the worst.
Oh, what are they? How much
trash? They produce per capita, they produce the most. And they also throw away the most. They have the lowest recovery rate. Although it's gone up, I believe. I think they had like some sort of national initiative.
Right.
Because it says here that it went up from 31% recovery rate, which is like recycling and that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Basically diverting it from the landfill to 50%.
Hey, that's
so it's
good.
Actually better than America as far as the resource recovery rate goes. Canada's the worst. I'm sorry. The worst. Yeah.
That's hard to believe.
I would think so, too, but it's true. The standout is Germany. Germany produces way more trash per person than any other country per capita, but they also have the highest recovery rate at, like, almost 80%. 80% of their trash gets diverted from the landfill.
That's amazing, actually.
That's efficient.
What's the American number on that diversion?
It hovers about a third.
30%?
For at least a couple decades now, maybe 3 decades, you could say Americans divert about a third of their trash from the landfill.
You'd like to see that number get better in 3 decades.
For sure.
You know?
And it always hovers around 33-34%. And it should be a lot better than that.
You know what that sounds like to me? Whoever's in charge of doing that study is just like, let's just use last year's numbers.
Yeah.
We can all live with that, right?
Yeah.
All right, so if you want a landfill in your municipality, you're going to have to start with a proposal by saying...
Yeah, you can't just go start one.
Yeah, you got to look around and say, we need a landfill, everybody. So let's do an environmental impact study.
Right.
And let's find an area, let's find a lot of acreage, because I think they use the North Wake County Landfill in Raleigh, North Carolina as their go-to example in this article.
That's where how stuff works started.
230 acres of land, about 70 acres of which is the actual landfill. So
right.
You're going to need a lot of land, and you're going to have to do an environmental impact study to determine a lot of things.
How much land do you have?
Yeah.
If there's enough of it.
Sure.
What type of soil you have,
yeah,
and what bedrock is underneath it.
Very important.
How water flows over the surface of the site.
Yeah, does it flow right down into the river?
Does it
not
percolate
good.
right, exactly. And then the impact it's going to have on local wildlife.
Sure.
And if it's an historic site, like an archaeological site.
Yeah, you don't want a landfill on an archaeological site.
What's funny is if you go back and look at the Fresh Kills landfill, which is one of the biggest in the world.
New York, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't even the only one for New York.
It's closed now, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And the guy who created the High Line, James Corner,
mm-hmm,
is creating a park there out of it. Like a massive, massive park.
Interesting.
I think like three times the size of Central Park.
Are they calling it Cancer Park?
I think they're avoiding that.
Okay.
I don't remember what it's called. I read a really interesting New York Magazine article about it, though.
Yeah.
It really well written and clever. Where it's basically like, that's awesome, that's awesome. This guy's got this great vision. And then, but it's a landfill.
Right.
You know?
Sure. At the end of the day, it's still buried garbage.
Exactly.
All right. So when we talked about the bedrock, that's really important because if you have, what you really want to try and prevent when you're building a landfill or operating a landfill is leakage and seepage.
That was the big thing.
Yeah.
When the EPA came along and started saying, like, you can't just bury your trash anywhere. There's groundwater.
Yeah, dummies.
And, like, as trash decomposes, it's not just, like, old Coca-Cola and banana peels. When those things break down and start mixing together, some really horrific stuff like ammonia gets produced, and that gets into the groundwater, and all of a sudden you're drinking ammonia. That's bad for you.
Yeah, that's called it's called leachate is the liquid.
Or garbage juice is another word for
it. Yeah, that's a better way to say it because that defines it all in one go.
Right, and the whole point of the dry tomb landfill was to do everything you could to prevent this garbage that you're burying from reaching the water table.
Right, so you study that bedrock. If it's too fractured, it's not going to work because it's going to seep into that junk.
No mines, no quarries. Because
no
they
mines.
Probably already have broken through the water table before they were abandoned.
That's right. But at the same time, you also need to be able to sink wells in various points. So you can't – the bedrock needs to allow for that as well.
That's right.
Like you're really looking for a specific area. When we talked about the water flow, of course, you don't want it flowing near wetlands or any kind of rivers or streams. That's a no-brainer.
Fresh Kills is an old marshland that they just filled the marshes and lakes in with garbage.
What did they name it that? Is that the area or like that's
Kills is a Dutch word for stream.
Okay, because I was about to say that's like the worst name for anything.
Totally.
Unless it was a butcher.
But it really means fresh stream.
Fresh Kills charcuterie.
Fresh stream garbage dump.
Yeah, that makes sense now. What does kill mean?
Stream,
okay.
Old Dutch word.
Because you've heard of like
fish. Bowery means
fish kill?
Farm.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yes, that would be fish stream.
That makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah. Fresh kills.
I wondered about that for years.
Now you know. Star.
All right, so local wildlife, they're going to really study that to see what kind of, it can't be in the area of a migratory route for birds.
Or like a nesting area, a marsh. Like Fresh Kills landfill.
That's right. And then once you figured all this out and they say...
Oh, wait. You skipped over the historical or archaeological site.
Well, you already mentioned that.
Like Fresh Kills landfill.
Okay.
Apparently, I think it was...
They did it all wrong, huh?
Henry David Thoreau said that arrowheads were the surest crop to dig from the ground at Fresh Kills before
really?
It was a landfill. Yeah.
Wow.
So archaeological site, wetland... And very close to the groundwater that's seeping right into it.
Unbelievable. And I believe there was a a large bunny rabbit population that they just dumped it right on top of.
Right.
So once you've figured it out, this is not Fresh Kills. This is actually a great spot. You're going to get your permits. You're going to raise your money. This one in North Carolina costs about $19 million to build.
Seems cheap.
That seems a little cheap, but I don't think that one's brand new.
Yeah, that's probably from the 90s.
Yeah. And then you probably have a public vote because you're probably going to be using public dollars and no one will know that that vote takes place and you're going to get a landfill built.
Exactly.
Boom.
Yep. They just build it in the night.
All right. So let's take a little break here and we will talk about building that landfill right after this.
Hey everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. All right, so you've got your permits, you've got your money raised. It's time to build a landfill.
Yeah, you shouted down the old guy at the Board of Commissioners meeting who objects.
Yeah, old man McLean.
Right, yeah. The tree hugger.
Yeah.
Let's recycle all our garbage, crackpot.
So we will list the basic parts of a landfill and then go over them in detail. How's that sound?
It sounds like a bulleted list.
You've got the bottom liner system. You've got the cells. You've got the storm water drainage. You've got the leachate collection system.
AKA garbage juice.
Methane collection system. And you've got the cap, the covering.
Kaboom. So, actually, that's the opposite of what you want to happen with the cap covering system.
You don't want to kaboom.
So start with the bottom liner, man. Again, this is the original purpose of all landfills that are in use today, unless they're bioreactor, although it's part of it. But this dry tomb landfill, the main part is the bottom liner. So they'll use a very thick, like sometimes 100 millimeter thick, very sturdy, like polyethylene liner.
Yeah, synthetic plastic.
That they line the whole place with.
Puncture resistant, strong, able to withstand a lot of trash being dumped on it.
And just to be 100% certain, they'll often use some sort of like fabric mat that they'll lay down first and then put the liner on and then put another mat on top of that to help prevent it from being punctured by rocks or garbage, rocks below or garbage above. Everything's trying to puncture this mat.
Yeah, it's a moisture barrier.
Right, but that liner is the main component, the initial component of the landfill.
That's right. Next, we have our cell, and a cell is basically the
The day's garbage.
Yeah, it's the day's garbage that you dump in there. You compact it. Airspace is key. That's where the more airspace you have, the more trash you can bury.
Right.
So they want to keep it as compact as possible. And they do this by rolling over it with bulldozers and flatteners and rollers and graders.
Right.
And they smush it down.
And a cell is it's a hole in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently in the North Carolina landfill that HowStuff Works went to back in the day, a cell is 50 feet long, 50 feet wide, 14 feet deep.
Yep.
And all the trash is put in there. Like you said, there's heavy equipment that rolls over and compacts it. And did you read the Atlantic article I sent you about Puente Hills?
Yes.
They said that there's an added benefit of compacting trash. Not just does it take up less space, it also kills about 50% of the rats in there.
Oh, good.
And then at the end of the day, when the cell is filled, they cover it over with about 6 inches of dirt that they then compact. That kills the other 50% of rats.
Oh, that's where the other half goes.
And that makes that type of landfill what's called a sanitary landfill.
Which means 100% rat-free.
Because they're all dead.
Yes.
They're squished or they're suffocated.
Yes.
By this process of compacting and covering over. And the by covering over this stuff every day, you protect it from being blown away by the wind, by being carried away from by the rain. You protect it from being dug up by coyotes.
Yeah, or trash scavengers.
Right. And so that's what makes it a sanitary dry tomb landfill is what we've described so far.
That's right. And to get this thing as compact as possible, they're going to weed out things like that huge roll of carpet that you took out of your 1970s bedroom.
Right.
Or that mattress that has a, you know, brown stained, like, looks like the map of Asia from the 1600s.
Right, because you raised that one lady from Hellraiser from the dead.
Yeah. So they're going to take out all that stuff and make it, you know, all the yard waste and make it as compactable as possible. And then that is compacted at a rate, depending on where you are, about 1,500 pounds per cubic yard.
Yes.
So boom. Flat, dirt is over it now. And now we need to worry about drainage.
Yeah. Basically, once you've created that cell, you've just completed a portion of the landfill, right?
Yes.
For the day.
One day's trash. It's so weird. It's like, here's Tuesday's hole.
Right.
365 days a year.
Yeah. And those, well, those, the Puente Hills people in that Atlantic article were saying that they, in retrospect, figured out that they could have predicted the economic crisis.
Oh, interesting.
Because about a little less than a year before it happened, they would fill up their day's cell by like 1 p.m. and closed. Now they stay open until 5, and it's not even necessarily full. So they noticed like a huge downturn in building materials and consumer waste like a year or two before the actual crisis happened, before the collapse.
Well, you know what the old saying, if you want to know the state of the country's economics,
mm-hmm.
go to a landfill.
It's a good thing.
That's what I think Jimmy Carter first said that. So you don't want liquids in that solid waste as much as possible. So they test the solid waste for liquids.
Right.
And if it's not liquid, then it's fine to go in the hole.
Right. So they put that in there. And the other way that they want to keep liquids out, and again, what they're doing is trying to prevent garbage juice from forming.
That's right.
Is to have storm water runoff drainage going on. So all of the, first of all, you never want a flat landfill, ever.
Oh, really? Are they out on a little slant?
You want to mound it at least slightly. You never want a plateau, right?
That makes sense, yeah.
And so you want the water to run off, and then when it runs off, you want to collect it in the pipes. You want to basically create an eave system like you have on the roof of your house.
Yeah.
And then shoot it all down to some concrete gulches.
Yeah, or if you have French drains at your house.
Arroyos.
Uh-huh.
Chaparrales.
What else?
Gutters.
Yeah. Haberdasher.
Right. And all that goes to a collection pond.
That's right. This is not the kind of thing you want to swim in. What they wait for there is for the suspended particles to kind of settle on the bottom.
Right.
And then they will test the water for those the garbage juice.
Uh-huh.
And depending on how nasty it is and riddled with chemicals, they'll go from there. They may treat it like regular wastewater.
Well, that depends. Like if just the storm water shows some leachate, they'll send it to a leachate collection pond.
Yeah.
If it turns out to just be normal storm water,
yeah, sure.
Then they'll let it flow out of there.
That's
and
right.
Into like whatever river or whatever.
Yeah, and sometimes it's gravity or sometimes they use a pump.
Right.
Depends on the lay of the land.
But if it's leachate, they have a separate collection system for leachate.
Yes.
Which is basically perforated pipes that are running through the cells.
Yeah, and the leachate's going to happen. Like, they try and prevent it as
right.
much as possible, but there is no hole in the ground where you're not going to have any garbage juice.
Right, exactly. So they collect that garbage juice as it's forming, and they run it out to a separate collection pond that's the leachate collection pond. And if you don't want to swim in the stormwater collection
yeah,
pond,
you really don't want to
like
swim
you
there.
Don't even want to look at the leachate collection pond.
No.
So, again, they let the particles settle. They test the concentration of the leachate in the pond, and then they send it either to an on-site water remediation system, like a wastewater plant.
Yeah.
Or else they send it to, like, the local city or county wastewater plant for treatment.
Yeah, boy, we got to do one on wastewater treatment at some point.
You got it.
Talk about fascinating.
Yes.
You poop in the water, and eventually you drink that
it.
Water. It's pretty remarkable what we've learned to do, you know?
Yep.
So the other big thing that we mentioned earlier was methane, and that is a byproduct. That's a gaseous byproduct of anaerobic decomposition.
Mm-hmm.
And about 50% of your gases coming out of this thing are going to be methane, about 50% carbon dioxide. And they say a little bit of nitrogen, a little bit of oxygen. I guess not enough to be a percentage point.
Almost negligible.
So methane is can be dangerous and hazardous, but it can also be very useful. So these days, they're finding ways to harness this methane and use it as fuel.
Right.
Which is pretty great.
Yeah, it is very great. And actually, there's a lot of money in it they're finding, too.
Sure.
Especially if you go to the trouble of building an on-site power plant.
Yeah.
Where you just basically extract the methane from the landfill gas, LFG is what it's called,
mm-hmm.
and then you burn the methane. You can create electricity, right? You can power a turbine, and boom, there's electricity being produced. And actually, at Freshkills, New York City gets $10 million a year from a company that has exclusive rights to extract the methane from this place.
That's pretty great.
$10 million. That's not
nothing to
something
sneeze at.
And Lincoln, Nebraska did a pilot study in 2010 and found that they could make about $300,000 a year from methane collection from their landfill.
That's awesome.
So if you're a city that's trying to like figure out ways to at least keep your landfill open, methane collection.
I call my worst days LFG, actually, when I have landfill gas. It's the worst.
My worst days.
So then you've got your covering and your cap is the final piece of the puzzle here.
Right.
And it depends on what kind of a landfill it is. Generally, it's going to be covered with 6 inches at least of compacted soil. And that's to keep, you know, rats and stuff out, the ones that aren't killed, and getting back into the trash. But like we said earlier, airspace is key. So that six inches, if they could find a way to make that 1 inch, that would be much better. And so they've been experimenting with that too, like paper or cement emulsions
right.
instead that you just spray on top instead of that 6 inches of soil.
Yeah, it's like a quarter inch.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you have 5 3/4 extra inches for trash.
Extra inches for more trash.
That's a lot, man.
Yeah, sure it is.
When
it adds up.
Speaking about this?
Yeah.
Which we are right now.
Absolutely. And then eventually, though, when you it will have a permanent cap, some sort of polyethylene cap,
right,
on top.
And so, even after it's closed, that Puentes Hills landfill outside of L.A. that was the focus of the Atlantic article, or Freshkills out in New York,
mm-hmm.
when it's closed, you don't just walk away from a landfill.
No, you plant stuff on it.
Well, yes, you have to plant stuff on it because when you cover it over with dirt, you want to plant something with a low root system
yeah.
that won't go into the landfill, but will still hold the dirt in place to prevent it from eroding. So like grass, kudzu.
Kudzu's great.
Not trees.
No.
Don't want to plant trees. But you also have to stick around and leave some people behind to monitor the groundwater for temperature changes.
Yeah.
Change in temperature suggests that it's there's leachate that's intruded.
Yeah, sometimes you can see the leachate seeping up through the ground.
Yeah, it's gross.
And that means that there's you need to address an issue.
It looks like the Beverly Hillbillies thing where Jed shot and missed that rabbit,
yeah.
and instead oil comes up.
Uh-huh.
That's what leachate kind of looks like.
Yeah. bubbles up.
But you have to keep an eye on this place for decades and decades and decades.
Yeah, I think they said in here like 30 years it needs to be maintained and monitored.
Yeah, at least.
At least.
I think that's definitely in the low end. So we'll talk a little more about operating a landfill and how to, well, I guess alternatives to landfills is a way to put it.
Yeah.
Right after this. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
So, Chuck, let's say you are Tommy Landfill, and you want to fulfill your birthright and open your own landfill.
Tommy Landfill.
And you got everything all set. You got the municipal bonds, old man, what was it?
McTavish. McBain.
Something like that.
McLean.
Yeah. He's been shouted down. You got the place open. How are you going to operate it day to day?
Well, what you're going to do is... It's going to be open to a couple of different things. It's going to be open to the municipality that collects the trash, of course.
Sure.
It's going to be open to demolition companies, construction companies.
Right.
And many of them, including the one I go to, is open to you and me.
Okay.
So let's say I'm doing work on my house, which I've done.
Yes.
And I end up with a bunch of junk in the back of my pickup truck.
I think it's called construction waste.
Yes, construction debris, which I try and reuse as much as I can, but you still end up with construction debris.
Didn't we do like a green renovation episode once?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
And I will drive my truck out there to the landfill in DeKalb County.
Right.
And I will drive up onto a platform. It's the very first thing you do with a little, it's a weigh station.
Does it make you go up on two wheels and then you drive through the landfill just on two wheels?
Yeah, it's a stunt.
Showing off?
It's a stunt car scene. And you drive up on the weigh station and they weigh your truck or your car or whatever with full of trash. You go dump it. There's going to be various stations. There's like a recycling station. There's here's where yard waste goes.
Kissing booth.
There's a kissing booth. There's a dunk tank.
Right.
You know, the traditional landfill items.
Like a Catholic school carnival.
At the one in DeKalb County, there's actually free mulch and compost if you want to pick up stuff.
Nice.
Which is kind of neat. But then eventually you'll be directed to... here is your dump. And I pull up my truck, I dump it in a big dumpster.
Okay.
Then that dumpster is then taken to the cell, I imagine. I don't follow the route, but that's what's supposed to happen.
Does it make that Bugs Bunny conveyor belt song?
Yeah, someone wrote in and had
a bunch
what that
of people
song
did.
Was.
Powerhouse.
Yeah, Powerhouse.
If you look up Powerhouse.
Was that the one that you were thinking?
Yes, totally.
Okay.
I can't remember the composer's name, But it was a 20th century composer who...
I think it was Old Man McLean.
Something Quintet.
Yeah.
I can't remember the guy's name. But anyway, look up the Something Something Quintet Powerhouse.
Yeah.
And then I think it starts about almost a minute and a half in. You'll be like, yep, that's it.
Yep, that's totally
you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, right? Absolutely. Okay. When I heard it, it was unmistakably Looney Tunes.
Yep.
So I dump all my garbage, and then I drive back out onto another platform, mm-hmm. and then they reweigh my truck. They do the math.
And the when they weigh it, they charge you a tipping fee.
Yeah.
Which is usually a per ton amount, right?
Yeah. And so, you know, it's not that much money. Like, I'll have a truck full of junk, go dump it, and then it's like 10 or 12 bucks.
Gotcha.
And, of course, it depends on how heavy the junk is.
Right.
But in my case, it was always, you know, light wood and stuff like that that I couldn't reuse.
Yeah.
Nails.
So that's basically everything we just described as a dry tomb landfill, right?
That's right.
But as companies like waste management and local municipalities have figured out, like, hey, there's actually money in this rotting garbage. They've been looking into ways to get more methane out of it. And what they figured out is that you don't want a dry tomb. You want a kind of moist, a little wet tomb. 35% moisture.
Yeah, I was really surprised that this isn't how it's done by now, because you can... They said, you know, what could take decades in a dry tomb to break down
right.
can take just a few years
yeah.
if you just add a little water.
Just a little bit of water. Like, there's already about 10 to 15% moisture in a dry tomb. No matter how much
yeah.
you try to keep it out, there's going to be about 10 to 15%. They figured out that if you add another 20, 25% water, you're going to greatly increase anaerobic decomposition.
Yeah, and it can be leachate. It's not like it has right. to be spring water or anything
exactly.
like that.
It can be that storm water you're collecting.
Uh-huh.
It can be leachate. It can be gas condensation from
yeah.
the gas that's coming off. And basically, what you're doing is you're speeding up that anaerobic decomposition that's already going on. So these things are breaking down that organic stuff, the banana peels and the grass clippings and
yep.
all that stuff that's already in there. They're not breaking down the styrofoam, at least not very quickly. So that stuff's still going to be left behind, but that's kind of that bury and walk away mentality as well still.
Right.
But at least the density of your landfill is going to increase tremendously as all that other stuff decomposes, and you're going to have the added benefit of a lot more methane production.
Yeah, and a lot more methane in a lot shorter time span.
Right.
So what they've had to do, because this is basically accelerated production, is create collection systems that can handle, they can't just throw the old methane collection system in there that's used to collecting slowly but surely.
Right, right.
They have to do something, collect a lot in a little bit of time.
Yeah, because they used to collect the methane in that they would harvest it and then burn it, which sounds horrible because you're just releasing all that stuff into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
But it's better than just venting it.
Sure.
Just venting methane. Methane's a much more potent greenhouse gas than even like CO2,
yeah.
like by far. So you don't want to just vent that stuff, so you'd burn it off. But even better is if you're going to burn it, at least use it to power stuff.
Yeah.
So by adding just a little bit of water, you can create you can accelerate the anaerobic decomposition. And since the anaerobic decomposition is what makes the landfill like a moving, living, evolving pile,
mm-hmm.
once that's done in 10 years... You've got all the methane you're going to get from it. The thing's not going to settle anymore, and you can walk away without monitoring it for the next 50 years.
Yeah, so the bioreactor model seems like far and away the wave of the future, right?
For sure.
I guess it's just a matter of like building more of them.
Yes.
So we got a couple of more things here before we close.
For sure. This is very interesting.
One neato thing that I didn't know. I think I knew about Giant Stadium, but...
I didn't know that. I just heard Jimmy Hoffa was buried there.
Right. Well, he might have just been in the landfill.
Right, yeah.
Apparently, some sports arenas like Comiskey in Chicago, Mile High Stadium in Denver, Giant Stadium in New Jersey, built on landfills because they're cheap.
Yep.
Cheap land.
Yes.
And some speculation that it might give athletes cancer.
Yeah, apparently there are a lot of Giants players, or several, that came down with cancer, that one of the linebackers, Harry Carson, told the New York Times, it makes you wonder what's going on around here, referencing the fact that it was built on an old landfill.
Yeah.
And apparently there was a game at Comiskey Park in
this
Chicago
crazy.
Where There was a, I think a shortstop.
Yeah.
Like ran into a piece of metal sticking up from the diamond.
Mm-hmm.
And like started like kicking away at it and realized it was getting bigger and bigger. And the grounds crew came out and investigated.
And it was Jimmy Hoffa.
Right. It was a copper kettle.
Yeah.
From the landfill that had moved its way up.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. So they had to dig it up and then refill it.
Unbelievable. I'm sure that was a lovely break for the fans.
Yes, because
like sit around for an hour.
So fast moving that they needed a breather.
I read an article on Slate called "Go West, Garbage Can!" Exclamation point. And the main gist of it is, when are we going to run out of space?
That's a great question.
You can't keep burying trash, right? Apparently you can, because what they're doing now is there are fewer landfills than ever before. They're making these huge landfills.
Yeah, gangs.
Yeah, in 1986, there were close to 7,700 dumps in the U.S. And by 2009, there were just under 2,000, a 75% decline in less than 25 years. And so essentially what they're creating are these super landfills, which is kind of cool. Fewer landfills, right? But what's the problem? Do you know?
Stinkier landfills? What?
The problem is you're now trucking garbage sometimes 500 miles away to dump in the landfill.
Gotcha.
Because your state may not even have one. So then they're looking at, you know, how much CO2 is used to do that. Like, is it really greener to have fewer landfills and truck your garbage on a train or in a truck every day?
Right.
And they basically say they don't really know. Which
just
is,
go back to burning everything.
Yeah, which is more environmentally friendly. In different states, apparently there's a lot of money in it. Different states have way more room than others, and then some states don't even want that stuff. Of course, in the Northeast, like Massachusetts, they're like, we don't want landfills
right.
in our state.
Right.
And then like Rhode Island, same way.
So they send it to Springfield.
They send it to Kentucky.
Well, no, remember the trash Simpsons. Commissioner episode?
Yeah.
He accepted other states' waste.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening.
Right.
Let me see. Arkansas has enough capacity for more than 600 years of trash without any more facilities being opened.
Well, there you go. We'll just send it all to Arkansas.
Whereas Rhode Island only has 12 years remaining. New York State only has 25 years of capacity left.
Send it to Arkansas.
So that's what they're doing. Kentucky is $29 per ton, making about $6 billion a year. Ohio, $21 billion a year of available landfill space.
It's because Ohio knows how to negotiate.
That's right. The Buckeye State.
That's right.
Don't tread on me. Wait, that's New Hampshire. Or is
that
Vermont?
I thought that was the Tea Party.
No, I think it's either New Hampshire or Vermont.
One of those. Yeah. No, New Hampshire's is live free or die.
Oh,
and
right.
They make their inmates make those license plates.
Yeah, no, don't tread on me wasn't a state motto. I think that was just
a flag with the cut-up snake.
Right.
That the Tea Party adopted, remember?
Did they adopt that?
Yeah. So, yeah, if you see a bumper sticker with one of those flags on it, they're not just like a history buff or anything.
Yeah, or if it says, who was John Galt?
Yeah.
That'll tell you something about the driver of that vehicle.
Was that a Tom Cruise movie?
No, John Galt was the main character in Atlas Shrugged.
Oh, yeah.
Ayn Rand.
I'm thinking of Jack Reacher. If you want to know more about landfills, you can type that word into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. And I said search bar, so it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this very sad email.
Oh, good.
But uplifting at the same time.
Oh, good.
Hey, guys. 2 weeks ago, my amazing and wonderful father-in-law, Walter, passed away. We had to drop everything, my husband and son and I, and fly from Florida to Germany, where he lived. He's been in my world for 24 of my 50 years, and I was so sad I felt like I was going to throw up all the time. When we arrived in Germany, walking through the front door of the family home, without him there was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. It was and is devastating. My husband and youngest son and I sat in a dark daze for days, mixed with crying and feeling lost. I always listen to podcasts while I run, though, which I do every day. And after 10 days of being there in Germany, I finally decided to queue up one of your podcasts while running. It was Blood Types. I laughed for the first time in 2 weeks out loud, guys. It was so nice to laugh again, and it really opened the door for me. I realized that we as a family are going through is so tough, but I also started to realize that if I could laugh, then I could heal. Yesterday, my husband and I, still in Germany, decided to go to walk to the nursing home where my aunt lives, which is 2.5 hours through the forest up and down hills. I love this family, by the way.
Yes.
Walking to the nursing home like that. We, of course, brought our 13-year-old son, Oliver, who was moaning after about 20 minutes of walking. I handed him my phone, and he listened to 3 Stuff You Should Know podcasts along the way and is now hooked. He loves you guys. My husband and I had a badly needed, quiet, get-in-touch-with-nature walk as a result, and we didn't have to listen to our son moan at all. More long walks are in his future as long as I have you guys on my phone. And Oliver also asked me along the walk, wait a minute, Mom, these guys get paid to do this? And when I said yes, I saw a sparkle in his eye.
Nice. I love this email.
Boom. That is from Jennifer. And Jennifer, that is awesome. Those mean the most to us.
Yeah. I mean, that is a great top-notch email.
Great email. And there was more to it, even. I had to leave out some of it for length.
Jennifer, right?
Jennifer and Oliver, her son, and she doesn't even...
Anonymous husband.
Anonymous husband.
Unnamed husband.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Jennifer. We appreciate you letting us know that. That's, again, great email. And if you out there want to let us know how we've helped you or hindered you or even woken you up from a deep sleep, if you're French, you can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.